Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Pal World, Untitled Banter Pal World, Pal World Podcast. Let's go.
God damn it, mate. You forced these intros. So, like, I was thinking, like, there's going to be some clever word, but you are a paid writer, my friend. I expected you to be a scribe of some renown, and you came in and you're just like, Jules Pal. You could have been like, Jules Me Pal, how's your world going? That would have been a better start, but no.
That would imply thinking it through more than the millisecond that it takes to hit the button and then just start talking to you. But I feel like it's worth saying that you're the only person on the planet that called this. I remember you telling me, like, last year, the year before, Pal World's going to be big. Pal World's the thing that I'm looking forward to or curious about. And then it's the biggest thing on the planet. We're not going to spend too long talking about it because it has been the entire week of the gaming discourse.
Very true.
But just where you are on the old Pal World thing now that you're correct about this.
Do you know what? I'm kind of savouring this moment, because very rarely do I get to say that I was 100% right, even though when I look over the game itself, I'm not actually that enamoured with it. I like the concept of it's Pokemon with guns, but I'm kind of over survival base building stuff at the moment. I feel like that's been done to death. But for what it is, which is every game all munched together, it's a fantastic time. And best of all, it's making Pokemon themselves start sweating, mates. Like, they're over there at Nintendo just going like, they actually want their games to have content and
stable frame rate? Is that
variety? Oh, I don't know about this one.
I'm curious how Pokemon takes it from here. Obviously, whatever the next Pokemon game is assumedly pretty far in development.
Yeah.
There was a quote from Andy Robinson over on VGC saying that internally he'd heard that the response to Scarlet and Violet, because it was such a horrific product, apparently they took it very seriously. They're aiming to do stuff a lot better going forward. Literally before we started recording, there was a report from Bloomberg confirming the new Switch is coming later this year with an 8-inch LCD screen or whatever.
So maybe that will be a feature. Maybe that's the thing. That would be quite cool.
Yeah, and it's like a nice thing to lead with. We should go into a bunch of questions, though. I didn't say this is the Untitled Banter podcast.
The UBP.
I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's always a lovely time. We thought we'd get through as many questions as possible. First one from Stefan Moore, who says, has there been a game that has blown up an ungodly amount and you just can't understand the hype? Very much inspired by Palworld.
For me, it's Fortnite.
Fortnite. Yeah.
Well, it's weird, isn't it? Because I do understand the hype, because, again, it's colourful, it's chaotic, it's very engaging, it's like jangling the keys right in front of your face and you can't ignore it. Like, it's fantastic. And as it comes to the actual mechanics, it's a very competent shooter. But I never got the hype because, well, one, I was afraid of losing myself to something like that, because it is ridiculously addictive. Like, you look at it and you think to yourself, wow, those gameplay loops are pretty good at hooking you right from the start. But also, just because of the fact that, I won't lie, I was put off by the amount of young kids that play that game. I was completely like swept up in the whole sort of Fortnite is for kids. I know it's not. I know there's tons of people like my age and older who
Daniel Durkin can't get enough of it.
Exactly, but at the same time, I just there is a mental divide between where I consider myself to be as a gamer versus that. Plus, if I'm honest, it's because I'm spending way too much time painting Warhammer, which again is a thing that other people would look at and say that's a game for kids. But at the same time, it's a different thing. Different thing, isn't it? Lovely time.
I just, when you mentioned Fortnite, I said, oh yeah, I remember Fortnite. What I meant was, I remember in 2017 when it dropped, I remember that weird version that launched that was meant to be that defend your base version. And then they put that video up where they were just like, hey, we love PUBG, so we're doing our own Battle Royale. And then being like, well, that's interesting. And then just that everything changed. And it's not like I didn't get it. I remember spending most of 2017 playing Fortnite. That was the one time I was into Fortnite. But I'd never expected it to get so big that Epic would launch their own Epic Game Store off the back of it. And then, you know, Epic, as they are today, is because Fortnite sold so much. And it's still going.
Yeah.
And then now it's hoovered up everything. Like, I was just seeing all the memes of, like, Master Chief and Kratos, and now Solid Snake's in there. And it's just like, as you know, I mean, I don't even know where it stops at this point. I kind of thought it would run out of momentum a few years ago, but it's
that's the thing, is because it's a collaborative force with every single thing. Mm. Like the events range from, like you say, Solid Snake appearing to Junji Ito getting his own like manga horror thing. Like it's there is nothing that cannot be grabbed by Fortnite at this point. And it's kind of amazing because you actually get mashups of things you would never expect to see before. This goes way beyond the sort of Sonic and Mario rivalry from back when we were kids. This is like genuine companies that actually hate each other having to go head to head now. Like Konami putting Solid Snake in there. And I'm sure that there's been a Death Stranding crossover at some point. Like,
if not,
then there should be one coming out when the new game comes out. There's going to be that sort of thing where, like, they have technically met once more. The paths have been crossed, even though those people do not want to be in the same room.
Just put Hideo Kojima in Fortnite, and then he can go around hugging Solid Snake and Raiden.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, but only if he has the taunt that says, "Kept you waiting, huh?"
Did you see the Death Stranding 2 name leak, by the way?
No, I did not.
It's going to be called Death Stranding 2 on the beach.
That's not true, is it? Are you doing a gimmick? Is this your whole Sloths of the Deadliest Animal thing? Wait a minute.
I guess we'll see how true it is.
I know you guys can't see this for the audio listeners, but I am genuinely trying to suss out if Scott is doing a bit or not. Like, is that actually true?
This is my version of the traitors. I'm not a faithful. But it leaked earlier in the week. Apparently it's going to be called Death Stranding 2 on the beach. And it's going to be revealed in the next couple of weeks. Because I guess... In that fiction, a beach is like a sort of weird parallel universe thing.
I remember the Princess Beach line as well.
Yeah. I was just like, sure. Because, I mean, some of the earliest concept art that was leaked, like, I don't know, it would have been a couple of years ago now, showed like a Death Stranding submarine that was then in the reveal trailer. And so it seems like this is going to be some sort of like coastal... Okay. Ocean adventure.
Okay, so what you're saying is that this to me is like finding out, like, you know when you go to the cinema and you see a trailer for a film and you're like, oh god, they have done something very weird with this. It's like, hey kids, are you ready for Death Stranding 2 on the beach? And it's just like Hideo Kojima driving up in a dune buggy with like flames on the side. He's like, hop on in, bro, let's catch some surf.
Like, that would be, I almost swore there, that would be effing incredible. Like if they just steered all the way into the absolute beat. You know the bit in Death Stranding 1 where he, like, I don't know if you played as far, whereas when you meet Heartman.
And
he has that little record scratch, and then Norman Reedus just scratches it a little bit and then he runs off. And as I just steer into that energy where there's just a random record scratch or something.
It's just like, chaos from start to finish. So, like, they'll probably be spending right now, Hideo Kojima is getting his team, like, cracking the whip and making sure that they are getting the sandcastle building minigame physics down, like, you know.
Every individual grain of sand must be modelled
together. It's like, you know that there are some games that have ridiculously like in-depth and fascinatingly detailed fishing mini games. They'll probably do something with this that is just like far beyond.
I never even thought of that, actually. But I don't know about you, but I love a good fishing mini
just
game.
Just catch a whale. Like, yeah. You're just like pulling it in.
Just that's why they're
on
the beach.
That's why they were all on the beach at the beginning of the first game. Because you kept on pulling them in, you idiot.
I'm just like, yeah. I don't even know what the hell that game's going to be. But in theory, we're getting a reveal in a couple of weeks. There's all sorts of rumours that we're going to get a state of play for PlayStation. So maybe it'll be there.
Actually links back to the original question, though, of what game blew up and you didn't understand the hype. I'm sure that there's plenty of people that didn't get Death Stranding. Like, because the reviews and the early hands-on impressions of that definitely painted it as like a walking simulator post-man apocalyptic pat or whatever it was called. And it's like that wouldn't appeal to a lot of people. They would be like, I want to play this because it's got the name brand recognition, but I don't get it.
Well, it didn't. Death Stranding kind of fell off the sales charts. Like it only really got to about number 30 in the UK charts in the first couple of weeks, and then it started falling down and down. Like, it is very much like a cult classic kind of thing, or like a success over time, but it didn't blow up like Metal Gear did.
God, that's bizarre, because I felt like it was everywhere. You couldn't avoid it. You couldn't avoid talking
about it. That's a testament to Sony's marketing, and then Kojima just being Kojima. Like, everyone's like, oh my God, the new Kojima game.
I'll tell you who else is going to suffer that same fate. Armored Core. No one's talking about that game anymore. Like,
I kind of forgot that existed.
Everyone's like, this is the best thing that From Software's ever released. This is like Bloodborne in mechs. And it's like, yeah, but where is it now?
True. I mean, I think across this year, we should be getting the DLC for Elden Ring, so that might spike a bit of interest overall.
Do not tempt me. Do not tempt me, mate.
Don't tempt me, brother. Question from Tristan Vetter, who says, hello, good sirs. Now that Microsoft has unfortunately laid off 1,900 staff, can they keep up their good guy underdog image? Xbox may be in third position, but Microsoft is a $3 trillion company. Shame that this had to come after a great direct last week. Yeah, this only broke last night when we're recording.
I'm making a very confused face. Was Microsoft ever considered the underdog? Surely.
Not Microsoft, but I think during all the Activision acquisition stuff, like Phil Spencer and Xbox's whole, a whole way they navigated that was like, we're just little old Xbox and we can't fight PS5 and
little
Nintendo.
Little old Xbox. It's like, we just bought the biggest games publisher and developers known to man, but we're just little
Well, that was the thing. Their whole thing during that entire legal process was literally just saying, we're terrible at this. Like, look how many exclusives we don't have, etc. And then, their whole thing was like this sort of, you know, we just care about the gamers. We're just trying to make sure everybody can play Call of Duty anywhere. Don't worry about it. And a lot of that happened. And then obviously, it only broke last night when we're recording this, but they've essentially laid off about 10% of their overall, part of Microsoft Gaming.
I was just thinking as well, actually, you're totally right on how they've crafted that image, because what was it? Was it Jim Ryan who was in charge of PlayStation during that period of time? Like, there was a person that could not hate the player base more and just see them as like as cash little piggy banks running around. So yeah, of course they look like the underdog compared to a literal black puddle of oil. Like,
that's very true. But the way that it's all shaken out, where it was like this deal was supposed to be, you know, like a new lease on life for like Blizzard and Activision, and even like Mikey Barr has left Blizzard, who I think is one of the founders, but he's definitely one of the veteran staff. And it just seems like right now, as we're recording this, it's in the aftermath of that decision. But a lot of devs just saying, I only just found out within like half an hour that I'm losing my entire team.
It's a shocking state that this is where we're at now, where we are probably at the highest point of profitability the video game industry has ever been in. And we are seeing the fewest people being there to actually run it. I'm not saying that this is like calling the doomsday bell for like the AI generation is going to come in and take these people's jobs or anything. I'm not going down that route. But I do think that it's genuinely sad that clearly some bloated sales figures here and there, projects spiraling out of like cost budgets and stuff like that, has likely caused these people their jobs.
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to what Scott and I always say, the customer should not foot your the development bill, but neither should the developers. It's so sad. You've got Microsoft, who should be one of the most stable companies in this entire industry, seeing as they are front and center of PC and PC gaming with their amazing Xbox Game Pass service. Why are we losing these jobs? Like, what's going on?
The fact that like Insomniac lost people after Spider-Man, that was broken AF as well. Like, Sony are in this pool as well, and obviously the Microsoft side of things. It is interesting looking over at Nintendo, because apparently they have they've had reduced CEO salaries ever since Satoru Iwata took a huge pay cut like about 10 years ago, because the Wii U was such a failure. Apparently he notably reduced his wage to give it to the developers to keep them going, and he had this great quote, which I don't have on hand, but it was a great quote about how people who are stressed out and worried about maintaining their jobs will never make great games.
No, of course not. And how could you? This is meant to be a fun experience. This is meant to be bringing dreams to life. And if you're sitting there thinking, I might not even get to the end of the month at the moment, then I wouldn't be looking at my computer screen with joy. I'd be probably firing up a load of CVs to get ready to print out. And I feel why isn't that approach being taken? And admittedly, I don't have the information to hand whether or not it actually has. But why haven't the Jim Ryans and the Phil Spencers done the same to keep their staff going?
Well, that's the overall thing with like, how can we have such a, like last year was like this great year for gaming in terms of the amount of games that came out, the variety and everything else, but anything that was bigger that sold, it seems like the majority of that profit went straight to the top and not to the developers themselves.
That's a real shame.
And then they just go, well, why don't we just reduce the headcount anyway, and then we can profit a bit more that way. It seems very vulturous, to make a word.
Well, if you think about it, like, if you keep your cost down across the board there, you've got some notable developers that have been sucked into the wider mass. As cynical as this sounds, there's always going to be new development houses that are making great games on a budget that is a fraction of the price of the AAA stuff. And these people like Microsoft, PlayStation, Nintendo, they're going to look at it and be like, well, we'll just buy you out. It's actually cheaper to buy you out, get your idea, make a quick buck off of you, and then just fold you into the mass to get you working on the AAA, and then we'll just squirt you out whenever it doesn't seem to be profitable. Mm-hmm. They're just going to keep eating.
Well, that's the thing. There's another comment from Kuzo who sent in, more layoffs in the industry are good because developers become free to work on in fresh games independently rather than sacrifice their energy to feed the soulless cash cows of your Halos, Fifas, etc. I don't necessarily agree with that one-to-one, but I get the sentiment.
They've got a point there. Like I know that it's a very optimistic way of looking about it. Like, if Scott and I lost our jobs tomorrow, I don't think that we would be incredibly happy about the situation. No. But
it might eventually work out, but you've still got to deal with...
Once that settles and the hunger grows to try and actually, like, make money out of the thing that we're passionate about, we probably would bounce back and look at it as a positive opportunity to do what we want to do. Mm-hmm. But with developers, it's... Where are the things that they have? When you have a collecting of people that are governed by somebody
like
else.
A union?
My God, I should not have taken that long to think of the word union. Like, if there was things like that to protect them, to move them into the right places, to make sure that these people are kept in work, to keep doing what they do well, then that would be at least something. But I don't know if those avenues exist at the moment.
I haven't been keeping up with the amount of different outlets that are reporting on this, but there has been mention of various people who are in unions not being as affected as others.
Okay.
But at the same time, on a long enough timeline, you would hope that the people who are talented manage to go forward, they make other studios. It's just the fact that this shouldn't have happened in the first place. Like you said, it should be a safe place to work, a reliable place to work. You shouldn't be waking up in the morning realizing you and your entire team have been laid off. Blizzard's next game has been cancelled. Apparently they were making this big wide open survival game or something, and that's been cancelled entirely, and that entire team's either been displaced or let go with them, like I said, with Mikey Barra leaving. So it's like you do have that reality of, like, imagine just losing your job and the amount of things that you were relying on money wise like inflation sky high. Like, it sucks. Like, on a long enough timeline, there's the hope that that thing works out, but a lot of people are already tweeting about, like, well, now I can't afford my medication I was going to get later in the month.
You're basically looking at maybe the money going to like 50 people at the top who are just like claiming such incredibly like large bonuses that make your eyes water. Mm-hmm. Why can't somebody up there just go like, oh, there's a shred of humanity left in me. Maybe I can go without buying a second island to this year.
Well, that's
maybe
the thing, and the amount of money that Bobby Kotick had, and obviously when he was on the way out after everything that
he's
done,
he probably got as well. Yeah,
yeah, and it's just like, I mean, it's a tale as old as time in terms of the people at the top hoovering up the most money, but I feel like it's so brazen right now. Maybe because of just the sheer spotlight that's on all of it because of social media and the conversations that happen, and everyone can get out there and tell their story. But it's just, it's more brazenly, nakedly ridiculous than it's ever been, and especially when it's this many people being affected on a week to week basis. Like, you know, it was over 10,000 people lost their jobs last year. Apparently, over 5,000 people have lost their jobs so far this year, and we're only at the end of the first month. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's a real, real shame. And, you know, like, if anyone who is listening to this podcast is in this situation, like, my heart goes out to you, because it's a genuine shame, and I wish that there was more things in place to prevent this from happening in the first place.
It's so sad. Please reach out. Like, my DMs are open anyway, but you can always comment on stuff. We'll put another question tweet out next week. But if you want any stories told, please feel free to reach out. We'd happily know more about the reality of what's going on.
Yeah, because Scott and I always campaign for transparency within the industry. So if there is something going on, if there's any nefarious stuff, or even if you want to just talk about the good times that you had there and how much you miss it, then please, reach out. I'd love to actually hear about it.
Yeah, it would genuinely be an honor to hear from people who are across the industry.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Question from Pinky, who says, what say you to the news that our beloved childhood friend Sega wants to charge extra for access to New Game Plus in Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth? Feels like another major studio taking the first step and hoping to set a bad precedent.
I know, yeah. Man. That is a really stinky practice. And hello, Pinky, by the way. Hope you're well.
Oi, oi. Yeah, the way that this is rolled out, the game's out today, there wasn't that much backlash overall. There was initial sort of thing of going like, okay, the idea of the New Game Plus is tucked in the Master Vocation DLC bundle, which is like $15 mm-hmm. extra on top of the base game. So they didn't really get that much ire, because it was kind of swept up in the PAL World discourse or yeah. whatever. And now the game is out, where like, if I haven't actually looked, because today's launch day, I've not looked at the trophies and seen if any trophies or achievements are fundamentally reliant on spending more money.
The moment that a New Game Plus mode adds in an iota of extra content, this becomes a horrible business practice, because that is just punishing your most diehard fans the most. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that there are very few games that I even want to go through on a New Game Plus once I've done them, because most of the time I feel like I've seen it all and done it all. Mm-hmm. But why punish the people that are there day one wanting to go through and play your game more? Surely you should be rewarding them for actually sticking with your game more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, exactly. And it's like that. I feel like over the years, like, I was thinking about all the like over the top money grubby monetization things that we've had. I remember the debate on day one DLC, the idea of like, it's already on the disc, why are we paying for it? And then obviously microtransactions, NFTs, whatever. And I'm just like, at this point, you know that meme where it was like, modern gaming is like a burger that's all separated?
And you pay for every single thing.
The cheese, and I was like, is this just another attempt at that? I said, well, what part of this can we segment off and then charge separately for? Well, I guess we'll do it for New Game Plus.
This going a hand in hand with other companies saying that video games should be £100 experience now, and it's just, they're like, are you actually kidding? You are looking at countries that are going through severe economic turmoil right now, where people can't afford to keep the heating on or their lights on over the winter, and you're now saying that if they want to try and have a small bit of a escapism, which everyone has the right to do, that you're going to now charge them upwards of £100 and then more if they want to play the game again? Like, I don't want to swear here, but are you effing mad?
When you put it like that, it is insane. Like, the state of the industry in 2024, the fact that even that conversation, the fact that even that's a potential permutable reality, like, is ludicrous, because that relies on, or that relates to the Rockstar stuff, them saying that you could, well, not them, but analysts saying you probably could charge £100, $100 for GTA 6, and people would pay it. But I'm always, like, having been in this industry for over 10 years, and having, you know, interacted with various businesses and different economies of scale and everything else, you just look at it and go like, do you guys at the top really get that much out of just the numbers going up? Like, that's all it ever is. It's just nebulous growth. It doesn't mean anything.
It's just it's the problem with capitalism, man. It's like, if you're not getting profits that are bigger than last year, you're considered to be a failure, which is just utter bollocks, because you look at it and you think, okay, we made £90 million profit this year, let's chase for 91 million. No, there's still £90 million above your operating cost that you do not need. Like just chill out.
It's a fundamental thing about the way that I'm wired as a human being, where I can't get anything out of, look, that number's higher. It doesn't mean anything. Like, I forget the name of the person who wrote about the happiness index and the idea that once you make a certain wage, in the UK it's about £45,000, once once you're over that, there's not that much more that can change in your life. You can't afford that much more stuff. Like, just aim for that at the absolute most and just be happy about it. I don't know why that's so alien. You've always got to go bigger and bigger and bigger and stretch it thinner. And oh my God, like, I don't know. Like I said, it's something about the way that I'm wired, but I'm just make enough money to be happy and then grant other people's happiness. Well, with your
most valuable resource is time, isn't it? It's like you only have a finite amount of it. And if companies are standing there and brazenly telling you that they're going to charge you £100 for the experience plus £15 to play through the game again, just break that down in what cost of time that's going to be for you to earn that amount of money. Think about it. Is that going to be a week's worth of work? Is that going to be a few days? Is it going to be a few hours worth of work? It all depends on that. And then that's going to give you an internal budget of what that experience is worth to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that they are taking the utter piss, because the amount of people that would say, that's a fair chunk of my work week to buy one game, of which there are 15 of them releasing this week alone. It's just madness.
And that whole idea of like, oh, we want to make it so you buy one game and then we monetize the hell out of it across the year, like a FIFA or a GTA or whatever it is, at least to me, is almost fundamentally antithetical to the idea of an art form. Like, I wouldn't want one painting a year and we just overanalyze it for a whole year.
Do you know what the most insane thing about this entire practice is? Is that it's like, as much as there's these companies trying to introduce the money-grubbing tactics and waiting for it to catch on, all it would really take is for one AAA publisher, kind of like how Larian Studios did when they came out with Baldur's Gate 3 and basically said, this is the standard that is being set. And everyone was like, for a while, they were like, oh, crap, we actually need to be accountable for the quality of our games now. Mm-hmm. There needs to be somebody who just stands up there who does an annualized franchise thing like your FIFAs or whatever and just says, we are not releasing a game next year. We're keeping the other game that we just released this year, but we're updating it. So legacy content. They would make so much more money in the long run because they would be supporting and rewarding the fans. Because they'd be like, oh, well, I don't have to pay £70 for the new FIFA. I'll spend £70+ just on microtransactions on this. You get the same money from them. So just look at your games. Like, if you're going to try the games as a live service, try it with something that has already established itself to be such a big part of somebody's life. And maybe
you're kind of getting
them,
like bits of that with the Call of Duty approach. Like, Modern Warfare 3 started as DLC for Modern Warfare 2 before they bulked it out. Yeah. And because they always want the unit cost. They always want the £70 unit cost. Mm. That's always going to make more than the individual microtransaction, or the assumption of it is anyway. But that's kind of that whole push towards live services in terms of Assassin's Creed as a platform. And going forward, apparently COD's going to be more of a platform. Call of Duty HQ or whatever it's called. But that's kind of something that is meant to be happening with Call of Duty, and kind of happened a bit with the WWE 2K games where they relaxed how often they were putting them out. But it's just like, my ultimate thing is just how much do you need to make, you know, to be satisfied by this? I absolutely get that that's a reductionist thing if you actually factor in the reality of paying people's wages and how much people want to be paid over time. But at some point, the amount of money being made at the very top does seem ludicrous,
You know what's going to happen, though, is that maybe there is one shining silver lining to this cloud, as it were, which is that people will look at the AAA space, they will be more critical of what they're spending their money on, and maybe they'll take that £100 that they're being asked to pay for these games in the future and go, and actually, I could get 4 to 5 indie games, support them, bring them up, pay those developers, make sure that that is supporting the true artists and individuals who are working hard at crafting something unique in the AAA and below tier. And it's like, that's maybe the only thing that could come out of this.
My other thing is that that's what I want. I want a healthier industry where they spend less money on more games. However you make that work, you can reduce the level of fidelity on the character models. I don't really care. Less cutscenes, whatever it is. Things like Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown, where it's gameplay forward, where it's a very, very solid, super satisfying Metroidvania, and it seems to have sold well enough. Like, it doesn't need to sell 7 million copies in the first weekend to recoup its budget like Spidey 2 did. To me, that's a much healthier industry, and I would then allow Ubisoft Montreal to go off and make something else without being tethered to this thing that they don't want to do.
Exactly. And it's like, you look at the message that they put out on their Twitter, which was like, thank you very much for the support. Well, we've received overwhelming critical praise, and there's people that are following this, and you've made our job all the better for supporting us. I don't see that same message coming out every time that a full-blown Assassin's Creed drops, because they constantly just, they're like, well, they haven't made X billion back, so it's a failure. It's a failure.
Yeah, and there's all those like apology.jpg things. I remember another response to that Prince of Persia tweet was like, usually we see these kind of graphics as an apology, saying the game's being shut down, or apologies, it's broken, or whatever it is. And it's like, the Prince of Persia game is just an actual video game that's really polished and great, and it's completely feature complete.
And surprisingly enough, that's what people like. What a shocker, eh? What a a shocker. We've only had, let me just check my watch. Oh, yes, since the early 80s to learn this.
That's the thing, you know, is dovetails away from that and just comes back to the idea of just a video game, which is the Pal World thing. That game plays well enough. Yeah. It's a bunch of satisfying mechanics. You can argue the artistry side of it, but at least it plays well. Mm-hmm. Question from Jacob Sawyer, who says, do publishers rely on surprise reveals to sell more units, or do you think if they allowed devs to be more open during development, they could potentially sell more?
So do you mean surprise reveals as in, like, you go to E3, there's a trailer that drops, and then it goes, it's out this year sort of thing, and then they go into the pre-orders?
I think that...
Because
like,
shadow dropping doesn't tend to generate good sales.
No. I think, but also, like, for me, like, the side of this that I picked up on was, like, the industry's so buttoned up. Like, everyone is NDA'd. No one can talk about something until a specific day. As opposed to, I always champion, like, the work that Danny O'Dwyer does with Noclip. Yeah. You know, stuff like the Double Fine, how the Double Fine Adventure game documentaries, or Indie Game the Movie, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. I would love to watch the development of a game week by week, month by month. I get that might be too much for the developers themselves to have to come and sit down and tell me what they're up to or whatever it is. But I do think the industry is overdue a spotlight on the creation of games overall, if not only to just help consumers understand the reality of what's going into stuff.
Well, what's interesting is that I use the new Skate game as a good example of how that's done right, because they actually just show the game in whatever form it's in at that point. It just said there's a lot of work still to be done on it, but we're getting there. We're starting to do betas. We're starting to roll out sort of like testing things now, and it's great. And I am more hyped for that game than I could have ever possibly been with just a teaser trailer and then just waiting for it, because the fear grows of whether or not this game will be in a runnable state when it launches. Whereas because I've seen what state it's in, I'm like, well, every step is a step forward with this. And I feel much more connected to the experience than I would have done before. So that's pretty much got a guaranteed sale out of me by them being like, it's not where we want it to be, but we're bloody trying. We're really trying.
Yeah, I appreciate the honesty side of it. I think as well, like, me and you, like, I mean, a lot of people listening to this will obviously remember the era where specific creators were spotlighted more, like the Hideo Kojimas, the Ken Levines, whoever it is. You don't necessarily get that very much now. It's more the company. It's more like, oh, it's the new Nintendo game. Like, Eiji Inuma gets mentioned in regards to Zelda, and Shigeru Miyamoto in regards to Mario. Yeah. But, like, it's not like, you know, who's responsible for the lead vision of Splatoon? Like, for the most part, it's not really there.
Yeah.
And so, like, I would kind of... There was the other side of that coin, which was we put too much stock in saying, oh, Hideo Kojima made this, as opposed to 300 people made this, and they guided some parts of it. But I do think that, you know, accreditation is, like, a big deal, and it's good to spotlight art teams, coding teams. Like, just look at the reality of turning ones and zeros into the things you love. Like, that's just such a cool thing.
I wonder if they don't do that so much anymore because they're afraid that they will basically go, oh, well, I don't need the company now. I can go off and do my own thing. It was like there was, like, a behind-the-scenes thing with Warhammer, of all things, recently, where, like, presenters weren't allowed to promote themselves. So eventually they were just like, well, we're just going to go somewhere we can. So it was just it might be the same sort of thing of, like, if you put one of these developers in front of the spotlight, they become famous for these dev diaries. They might just go like, right, cool, the game's launched and I'm going to go too, because now I can launch my own company.
I wonder about expectation as well, because I think the potential other side of it is that you get consumers seeing in progress versions of something, like when GTA 6 leaked a couple of years ago, and they go like, well, that's exactly what I want. And then over the course of a game being put together, maybe levels get scrapped and ideas get scrapped. It would definitely be getting consumers or the public in general comfortable with the knowledge that things could be cut and moved around. I think for the most part, if people, you know, when I always think about when The Last Jedi started filming, and it was, they showed, like, day one of filming, they were all standing on the island in Ireland, and they showed that this is the beginning of filming. If they then tracked that week to week, month to month, okay, we're ditching this plot line, we're going to go with this, I just wonder whether people would be okay with that or not. I would, because I would find the process fascinating and I couldn't wait to see what you've actually gone with on launch day. But I don't know if the average person wants that, or they get hung up on something
you've brought up a good point there, because recently there's been new adverts coming out for the Dune sequel, and it's weird because, like, the footage shows like 10 seconds of, like, actual footage from the film, and then the adverts that I've seen has cut to Timothée Chalamet just being like, yeah, it's great to be back on the set of Dune 2, I'm so excited to be doing this. And it's like, it's so weird because he's not in, like, a suit or anything, he's in his character's, like, costume, right, just chatting to the camera, and I'm like, I don't know if I want this, because it's weird with games. With games, I want to see everything. With films, I'm just kind of like, oh no, I'm here to have the escapism. Like, I don't want to see this. It's weird.
I think, like, the for the most part, like, the NDA approach, the whole, like, shock reveal thing has worked, like, in previous generations. It's just that now game development cycles are so much longer, and it's so much more volatile, and entire projects get swept off the table, like with the Blizzard thing, where I guess they don't want to mention X number of things as in production, because it might not even get to the finish line.
Yeah, true.
You're
almost getting people's hopes up, aren't you? And then it's just being like, right, well, that game isn't actually coming out.
Yeah, and a lot of people treat that as like a promise. You know, they use the phraseology of like, oh, they promised this. And it's like, well, unless they specifically vocally said, we promised to give you this, they didn't promise anything. They're just showing you a potential of what it'll eventually be.
Yeah.
And a lot of trailers and marketing is for shareholders and budgets anyway. So it's just a weird, thorny issue. But ultimately for the question, I'd want to believe, yes, that if there was more spotlight on the industry overall, it would be healthier. But a lot more components would have to line up.
Definitely.
Anyway, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
Any time, we'll put a question out next week for various things you would like us to talk about. And yes, any developer stories, anyone in the industry whatsoever who'd love to reach out, please do. For now, thank you all very much for sending in your questions, and we'll catch you very soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Didn't say the Twitter handles, but they'll
find them. That's okay. They know where we are. They know where we are.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.